This is Big Mike Mike Logan, and you're listening to the Strong Style Story Podcast.
Welcome to episode 26 of the Strong Style Story Podcast, and the first of to as an official member of Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed. So, hello, everybody.
Konnichiwa.
That was my co-host, Steve Cash. I am Jeffrey Wessel, the host selector of this fine thing. You can find us on strongstylestory.tumblr.com. That's the regular blog. You can also find me on Twitter at strongstylestory without the E in style because of Twitter character limits. For those of you who are following through our normal channels of Podomatic and or the iTunes feed, just to bring everybody up to speed, we have been now officially picked up by Place to Be Nation and the and their association with the Pro Wrestling Only board and their podcast feed. This is the culmination of a relationship that began when Steve and I did the Strong Style History podcast for them for their pilot season back in November, and that has gone so well that we decided to the fine folk, Brad and Chad at Place to Be Nation, decided to pick us up full-time for the main show as well. And we actually have gotten, you know, bigger numbers than we ever have before, and even on our Podomatic feed, oddly enough. So, but ironically, our Podomatic feed and iTunes feed, our own page, are going to be going away soon. Within the next couple of episodes, because we're going to be folded into Place to Be Nation full time, but you know it's definitely a much wider audience, and we actually have some help getting promoted out there now with thanks to Place to Be Nation. And it's all going to be in good fun, especially when and I'm really glad that Brad was cool with this idea, because we warned them that while we're out in LA for the G1 special shows, that we're going to be we have jokingly said we're going to be doing podcasts about hourly, but that might actually about be the case.
Well, yeah, I completely expect it to at this point.
Yeah, I mean we are going to be doing little hour long drop-ins every so often, especially since they're going to be having that press conference in Gardena at a Japanese grocery, the name of which I don't have in front of me right now, but they're definitely going to be there's going to be a presser there, so I know at the very least, myself, regular producer Chris Damasceno, who couldn't be here today, also our fourth chair, Lawrence O'Brien, who also unfortunately could not be here today, and friend of the show Dion Wells, I know we were planning to be there. Steve, are you going to be in LA by that time? Because I know you're coming from Bakersfield.
Yes, absolutely. It's just a couple hours drive for me, so there's really no reason for me not to be there.
Yeah, I think we're. I think the plan right now is that we're. I think we're going to be staying in the proper city of LA on the night of the 29th, because that's when myself, Chris, Dion, and Lawrence are all getting in. Although Dion and I are coming in on the same flight, and we don't get in until about 10:30 at night. Which will be about 1:30 in the morning, Indianapolis time. So this will be real fun.
Yeah, you're going to be feeling pretty good.
Oh, yeah, and considering we're going to be waking up, I have to get up at 4:30 in the morning that day, too. Man. You know, my time, that's 1:30 a.m. L.A. time. So, yeah, to you know, planes, trains, and automobiles that day. So it's going to be, yeah, that's going to be a fun day. But
it's the price you pay to make the towns.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, there's so much going to be, yeah, I'm doing so much traveling there. I think the first show actually is going to be that we do from L.A. is going to be myself, Chris, Lawrence, and Dion live from an In-N-Out burger, I think.
Strong style food reviews.
Oh hell yeah, yeah. We're definitely going. We're going all out there. So, yeah. So anyway, so thanks to Place to Be Nation, the Pro Wrestling Only board for having us, and just get ready during the G1 special weekend when we're going to be flooding the podcast feed. And by the way, I know that there is an iTunes feed for Place to Be Nation and the Pro Wrestling Only board, which is great because you get to listen to some other fine shows on the Pro Wrestling Only board podcast feed, such as Live from Center Stage, you know, going through yay old WCW days. We also have, I think it was Live from Space City, I think it's called. Let me, here I am trying to promote it, and I'm ill-prepared to talk about it. Space City, yes, an NWA On Demand podcast, which, the future of that may be up in the air, considering Billy Corgan just bought the NWA, so who knows what the future of that'll be, but it's a fine show, you should listen to it. There's also, Throw the Years, a Ring of Honor historical podcast. So, yeah, lots of great shows to listen to on the Pro Wrestling Only Boards podcast feed. Psychology is Dead, that's another good one. So, although it's a pretty long one at times, too. Like, the last episode they did was about, 4.5 hours long, so.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes, yeah, some of these shows you need some dedication for, but, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that, though. All that means is you can pause, take a break, and come back to it.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I tend to do a lot of my podcast listening in, while I'm driving, So, yeah, sometimes, mm-hmm. You got to pause and go back to it, but, So anyway, yeah, there's quite a lot of good content on this, and we're really happy to be part of it. And we are still going to do Strong Style History as well. In fact, we're currently debating what the next one's going to be because we've chosen a topic, but there seems to be some argument on the accuracy of it. So, so stay tuned for that. So, Steve, how you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, still, just being a father. That's kind of my life now.
Yeah,
for the time being.
Yeah. For about the next 18 years, yeah, brother. That's how that's gonna go. Matter of fact, my daughter is graduating high school
congratulations,
this coming Thursday. Yeah, it's considering the road she's had to take, it's a good thing. I'm really, really, really. Really glad that it's culminated in this, and so shout out to my daughter Miranda. So yeah, mm-hmm. How about that, and a shout out to my honey's kid Gabe, who is actually flying to Japan for 10 days.
Oh wow!
Starting tomorrow as we record this. Ironically, he's going to be at Osaka Joe, but not during Dominion. It's like the first place they're going, and
he's just going to be right outside.
Right outside, yeah.
Is he a wrestling fan or just no?
No.
Oh, okay, well, that
no,
makes sense.
He could not give a shit about but, you know.
Like but, most of Japan.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
We live in this bubble, but come on, let's be real.
Yeah, let's get real here. But, so here we are burying our own product right here. this is the sort of antics you get to experience every time on the Strong Style Story podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Shout out to all the new listeners. So All right, we are recording this on June the 4th, 2017. The day before, we had the culmination of the Best of Super Juniors 24 for this year. And we have a winner. We have a winner as Kushida, the winner of B Block, bested Will Ospreay, the winner of A Block and the two-time finalist now, two consecutive time finalist now, beating him with the back his new finish, Back to the Future, in about just shy of 28 minutes. And Steve, I'm guessing you've seen the match.
Oh, I stayed up live for it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and see, paid for it the next day.
I didn't, but yeah.
Well, it's a little easier on me, being it starts at, well, I was going to say a reasonable time, but it's 1 a.m. reasonable.
Yeah, that was 1 a.m. It was 4 a.m. where I am. So
it's more reasonable compared to you. So
compared to me, yeah. But, yeah, and of course, you know, he has this new, you know, Kushida has this new finisher now, which, that was funny with Seth Rollins of the WWE getting his feelings all hurt because he needed something.
I can't imagine he was that upset considering how big a fan he is.
But you know, it was still a funny thing to read, you know. It was a funny thing to read. Kushida beats Will Ospreay. And you know, I'm sorry, but shout out to everybody who thought Will Ospreay was actually going to be going over in this match.
That's what blew my mind the morning of all this argument over who was going to win. It's like, guys, the story has been told. The moment Kushida lost the lost in like 90 seconds or two minutes,
exactly.
Whatever it was.
That was going to be the only way he would ever challenge Hiromu again was to win this.
And it only kind of cemented the fact, I don't know if we're going to go show by show or not, but just the fact that he lost his first two nights. Like, if anything, my main complaint about the whole tournament is that they sort of telegraphed it too hard.
Well, yeah, and then unfortunately that's been kind of the story of all the tournaments in recent years. You could tell who's going to win just by, you know, like early on in the results. But I called it last show. I think you did too.
I called it. Yeah, last time I was on the podcast, I think I called it.
Yeah, and I know, like a bunch. And I know Dion and Bunches were on the last show too. I totally called that. Yeah, this was going to be Kushida winning. Now, pity that my A Block pick went absolutely nowhere because
Who was your A Block pick?
My A Block pick was Jushin Liars. I thought he was going to you know, have his, you know, go out and I didn't think he was going to win the tournament, but I thought he was going to win A Block and go out in like blaze of glory. Yeah, well,
so you weren't pulling. You weren't pulling your hair out like Dave Meltzer has been the whole tournament.
No, I was just like, yeah, well, so much for that, you know.
Yeah, have you been following that at all?
No.
This whole argument. Dave wanted, because he kind of personally, I think he actually went to the show live, but he watched the year Choshu won the tournament. It was his last G1, and it was a phenomenal success. So Dave, for whatever reason, just had this idea that Liger needs to win the tournament. It's his last tournament. He needs to win it. And it's just kind of amusing because, you know, if you just know Japanese wrestling, you know the old guys aren't going to win the tournament. It's a modern age. And just kind of funny, just amusing watching Dave Meltzer kind of pulling his hair out match after match, but in the end they did the right thing. You know, they did what they had to do, especially with the final match with Taichi.
Right. Yeah. Fuck Taichi, but you know, it was a good.
I will not express that opinion.
I totally will. I think that's the official line that this show takes is fuck Taichi. In fact, if you go back in our archives for the new listeners, if you go back in our archives, you'll see that there is an episode called "Fuck Taichi." So, episode 19, I think, for those keeping count. Anyway, but yeah, I don't know why. Why anybody thought that Ospreay was actually going to be winning this is beyond me because. I mean, we knew this the second that King of Pro Wrestling happened, and Hiromu squashing Kushida in that amount of time. I mean, that was totally how they were going with this.
Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't even be necessarily patting ourselves on the back, because it really was obvious.
Oh no, I'm not patting myself on the back at all. I mean, it was the most obvious choice. I mean, I'm just kind of more lamenting the fact that, you know, I completely crashed and burned on Liger, but you know.
yeah, but I mean, when you reach a certain point in your career, this is kind of the trajectory you take, and.
Yeah, I get that. I just think it would have been cool. I mean, I think it would have been, you know, much more storyline-wise that, you know, yeah, okay, he wins the block, but, you know, he gets to, you know, have his final. But then,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't think he was going to win it, you know.
I personally would have liked it, too, because I love Liger. I mean, who doesn't?
Yeah.
He's a treasure.
He is. Well, of course, you know, again, somebody, I did see somebody say something about being selfless, you know, being selfless again. I recalled the conversation we had in the pilot for Strong Style History. He's like, wait a minute, this is the same guy who booked himself to destroy the entire junior division, which you know, it was laid waste for like over a decade.
Yeah, I think the last 15 years or so of Liger's career has been a direct response to the previous 15 or so before that.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much, but yeah. Overall, though, I thought that I loved a lot of the quality of the Best of Super Junior matches this year. I thought, I swear, you know, even though it was pretty obvious that he was only going to win the, you know, his first three matches, but as far as a worker, I thought for a while El Desperado might have actually been the MVP of this tournament for the work he was putting in.
Yeah, everyone put in. I mean, I guess you can omit Taichi, because Taichi is Taichi, as much as I love him. But everyone else, even Taka, I thought put in just a superb amount of work. The guys obviously kind of phoned it in on the house shows, but, you know, to avoid injury, you kind of have to do that. But as far as the Korakuen and Osaka and even the Nagoya show, just really good, just really high standard of wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, though. I mean, I thought some of them were like, what was it, the Bushi-El Desperado match?
They had a good match,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, El Desperado just, you know, just destroying Bushi in that. And then, you know, Bushi got to return the favor at that last Korakuen show with his match against Kanemaru, where that went all over Korakuen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought that, I mean, maybe Bushi might even have a case for being the MVP of the tournament. I mean, for his, you know, the work he did.
I probably would give it to Ospreay, because I think as far as a guy who did not have a bad match the whole tournament, I mean, nobody had a bad match, I should say. But as far as, like...
some maybe carried more than others, but...
Yeah, but as far as putting in, like, a top-notch effort, I thought Ospreay just kind of killed it each night.
Right. And I think it was great that Liger actually, you know, did win his final match in the tournament.
Oh, he had to. I mean, yeah. It was not a coincidence that the last night was against Taichi and...
Yeah, and no, I mean, no. But I mean that, yeah, and then like the uniform rip, and I mean that was something.
Yeah, what is it with Liger wanting to show off his body lately?
maybe it's you know, just one of those things.
Just proud of it, I guess.
He's either proud of it or it's just like a vanity thing where he's feeling really self-conscious. About things.
Trying to get his mask ripped off to remind himself and everyone how jacked he is.
Yeah. You know, back in the good old days when he fought Great Muta, and, you know, he had the makeup on underneath and misted Muta, too, you know.
That's honestly where I thought this was going.
Really? You thought he was going to miss? Like,
I thought two times during this tournament I just got Kishin Liger vibes.
Oh,
like, from
yeah.
the... When Hiromu was talking about if he won, he was going to wrestle, he was going to challenge someone that started with a K, and that made me think, oh, Kishin Liger, but
yeah,
never go in there. So
yeah, But yeah, so I mean, yeah, I mean, this was, I mean, this I enjoyed the tournament. I don't think there was, I mean, there's a lot of standout matches, and I am really shocked how quickly Marty Scurll got himself over with the Korakuen crowd.
He was over before he came out. It was amazing.
Yeah, that you hear the crowd going the whoop whoop. Although I think the whole thing with the arms flapping, I think is, you know, he's overdoing it, you know.
I'm glad you brought this up because I like Marty Scurll overall. Like I
do too. I love the whole villain shtick. I really do.
Where people kind of complain about Kenny Omega going overboard, I have the same problem with Marty. Yeah. And just kind of, he's just too out there at times for me.
Well, I think they both go a little over. Dion, we were at a show yesterday. We were like, you know, most wrestlers are complete marks for themselves, it seems like. And you know, he just, it gets reflected after a while, you know.
Yeah, I honestly wonder, is just the intellect of the New Japan fan now that just they read the internet and they know who these guys are, or do they watch the ROH shows on New Japan World? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I think there was, and don't forget there was also, you know, the Rev Pro shows that New Japan has done too. I don't think any of Skrull's matches ever ended up on New Japan World. I could be wrong. Maybe the match against Jushin Liger did. I could be wrong.
They do put up a lot of stuff, so it wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, I mean maybe there is a lot more maybe there's a lot more streaming going on than we assume. Foreign streaming going on in Japan than we assume, but yeah, I mean, it was I admit I did not think Ospreay was going to win the Able. I mean, obviously, I called Jushin Liger, but I mean, even with the booking being what it was, I didn't think that I didn't think that Ospreay would be the guy to win it. The block, I thought maybe Dragon Lee could have been, because that could have also been another good storyline match. You know, considering the history between Dragon Lee and Hiromu, you know.
Yeah, there were so many potential finalists that it's kind of hard to pick just one. Ospreay was kind of the logical choice to me, but Dragon Lee, they're obviously very high on him, so it wouldn't have shocked me. Ricochet could have also easily been in the finals if he had done a little better. Are we going to talk about the cluster that was the B-Lock in terms of, like, the last night, everyone having 6 points?
Yeah, that was very strange. I mean, I know that people like to complain about the parody in the blocks, but that was bizarre even for New Japan. I mean, that was bizarre.
It's like, it was almost beautiful because it's like just how... You and I both know, just from prior experiences doing things, that we know how hard it is to book these things and how intricate they are and how you have to have every match lined up. It's like it's beautiful. Like honestly, just every guy just has the same amount of wins, but on the same time, it's terrible booking because just nobody's getting ahead.
Right. That much is totally true too. And you know, yeah, I mean, and I did question some of the wins that were going, like, you know, why Taichi, you know, got anywhere in the block, but you know,
But, I mean, it leads to weird things like that, like there was a match that just made no sense. I think it was Taka beat Dragon Lee, didn't he? That makes no sense to me. Like Taka has no business beating Dragon Lee.
You know, here we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the situations you end up in when you have round robins and you have to have certain guys at certain points. I mean, there's a reason why we don't do them here in the West.
Yeah, I mean, round robins are just weird. You know, they're
and I like them, so I'm not arguing against them. I just
But I mean, at the same time, and you know, I swear, you know, we had last recorded on May the 14th, which was before that last Ring of Honor War of the Worlds show. And then, so of course, you know, the big story from that being Kushida beating Marty Scurll for the ROH TV title, where where I'm just like, well, great. How is this going to affect Best of Super Juniors now? Because I figured that, okay, they took it off of Scurll because, you know, he wasn't going to win BOSJ, so ROH doesn't want the TV champion to, you know, get jobbed out in a major tournament. But then again, okay, so they give it to Kushida, and for a few minutes there, it looked like he wasn't going to win it either. Because at one point, he had like one win, three losses, and they weren't all consecutive losses. I think he had like two losses, one win, and then he lost again, which that kind of goes against, you know, the tournament formula in New Japan. Yeah, yeah. So to speak.
Yeah. I'm wondering now, like, maybe you are onto something. I didn't even think about the TV title and how it factored in, but that makes a lot of sense. You know, you wouldn't want your TV champion going in and losing a tournament. So why not just put it on the guy who's going to win it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, that seems to be, that's definitely what ended up happening, of course. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed like it was just bizarre, you know, that
I didn't even, this shows how little attention I've been paying, but I didn't even know Kushida was the TV champion going into the first night.
Wow, yeah, you haven't been paying attention then, have you?
No.
I mean, I only wrote it on the blog, Steve, that you never fucking read, but...
You know. I do read the blog. I just don't read it every day.
Yeah. By the way, for the new listeners, we bury Steve on a regular basis on this show. Just
it's my lot in life.
It's part of the gimmick. We just bury Steve, so...
No, that's what they like to say.
But... And, also, you may recall that, you know, going into this tour, it was announced that Hiroshi Tanahashi got injured. On that final ROH show, so Hiroshi Tanahashi got injured. So Satoshi Kojima, who wasn't even booked to be in this on this tour at all, ended up slotting in his spot and ended up losing quite a lot to Tetsuya Naito.
And looking great in the process.
And looking great in the process, yes. That much is true. Kojima is still a guy who's like, he's getting up there. Like, he's on the wrong side of 43 now, but he still looks good.
You know? Yeah, he can still go. I mean, he might not be able to go as far as G1 level quality singles matches, but man, in those six mans, among all the dads, he looks the best.
He does. Him and Nagata both can still go, so there's I guess Tanahashi will be back for Dominion. Mm-hmm. So okay. So hope that bicep's not doing too badly.
And I am sure it's not healed.
Yeah, and can we talk Naito actually destroying that belt? can we talk that? Whoa.
Yeah, it hurts.
Whoa, Nelly.
You know, it's been kind of happening ever since he's first won the title, but yeah, it's certainly reached a new apex, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking like actual destruction now. So,
like, I could not. I was aghast when he slammed that thing into the post.
Oh yeah, when he just threw it at it and it dented it, and now he's like, yeah, wow.
As someone who has a lofty dream of somebody owning a championship belt, it just made me cry.
Well, you should talk to Dion then, because he is awaiting his IWGP heavyweight title replica, and he says that, you know, right when he gets it, he's going to toss it in the air.
That'd be awesome.
So he also has a dream of actually getting a triple crown, like the actual triple crown, not the new version, mm-hmm. like the original Sankan belts.
Dion sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah, I think y'all are gonna have some fun when we're all together in LA. So anyway, back to so your top three matches. Of the tournament, Steve.
Oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought of this. In no particular order, because like in my head I can't really decide which is better. But top two definitely is Kushida Taguchi from The Last Corkin. It was
Corkin,
that right?
That was fantastic.
Okay. Yeah, that was as far as like the most dramatic, you know, technical psychology based match. I mean, that was the best. Taguchi's phenomenal. Like I can't praise him enough, and I'm so glad he's finally kind of finding a top level niche for himself.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
something that's kind of getting himself.
Yeah, yeah, he's a unit leader now. I mean, who would have thought?
Basically, yeah.
I mean, he was
yeah, and,
he's gone from being, you know, the lesser member of Apollo 55 to being a unit leader now. like Dragon Gate couldn't write that one, you know.
Taguchi Japan itself is pretty fascinating in terms of just being a joke unit, and then now we have all this merch that we can buy.
Yeah,
which, as we know, is what qualifies you as a unit.
Yes, exactly.
If you don't have merch to buy, you're not a unit.
You're not a unit yet. Well, they have merch now. They are a unit.
So I guess
that means I need to start listing them as a unit now on the blog, because I so, you know, consider all these guys part of the Sekigun, but you know, maybe I need to start listing them as a unit now.
Hey man, I was on their website yesterday and they have them under Taguchi Japan.
Oh my god! Oh, well, there they go. Then it's official. Then so yeah.
Yeah.
So I better get straight with that then on the blog. But.
So that was great.
But, you know, Taguchi really, that match was fantastic. He really had a quieter Best of Super Juniors, though, this year, I thought. Than last year, obviously, when he was a finalist.
Did you see when he got stabbed in the ass by Despy?
Ooh, yeah.
Nothing quiet about that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think we could do with a little less proctology in our professional wrestling, honestly.
It's a dangerous line that we're treading right now. But
yeah.
But
it's
again,
always
see something
too.
That's yeah. I mean, he's the king when it comes to comedy. Not that I don't know how that's considered comedy, but you know, Japan's just weird.
Japan is kind of weird when you look at it.
We love you, but you know, we're gonna call a spade a spade.
Yeah, but it's kind of weird. Yeah. So of course, you know, we're pretty weird too. So I mean, let's face it, the Western world is pretty weird too when you get down to it. So
number two, I would easily pick Osprey Kushida. Or no, I'm sorry, not Osprey Kushida. Well, actually, yeah. I mean, if we're counting that, I mean, I guess that would be in the top three, because I thought that was just a phenomenal, crazy match. We won't get to it just yet because we haven't got to the finals. But the other match I love. There's so many good matches now that they're all coming to the forefront of my mind. But I'm just gonna go with my gut. Osprey Ricochet blew my mind. It was not a great psychology based match. Jim Cornette would not approve.
But you know what? I don't think it was anywhere near as earth shattering as last year's edition.
It,
I mean, it was, and especially since they've already done that match. You know, like, you know, eight other promotions since that Best of Super Juniors. And in fact, they did it before that. Before that one. I think they did it like on one of the WrestleMania weekend shows that year too.
Yeah, that
as I recall. So the Ricochet Osprey feud, it seems to be I wouldn't say wearing its welcome out, but it's they haven't really added any much new to that story. I mean, it was a good match, yes, but I wouldn't put it in my top three this year, unfortunately.
And I wouldn't either if I had all the matches in front of me and it's like, oh, okay, that was better, because I mean I could always put Taka and Taichi in there instead.
Well, knowing, I kind of have expected from you, though, so.
I love that match, but I can't honestly say it was a good match.
Right. Well, you know, wrestling does tend to lend itself to that, where, yeah, we love this, even though it's hot garbage. Like, a match I always, I mean, and I think I've talked to you about this before, too, because, you know, having known each other for, like, you know, over 15 years and shit. Remember, I used to, like, rate the match where Kenta Kobashi beat Vader for the Triple Crown. Like, I used to say I love that match, but I come to find out that, like, in the intervening years, is like I seem to be, like, the only one. Like, it was, like, a low-rated Triple Crown match. I was like, really? I seem to recall that match being fantastic, you know? You know, you know, just because of the build up to it, with, you know, Kobashi being the big hero of all Japan, you know, beating Vader.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever seen that match. Have you watched it recently?
I watched it about a year ago when it showed up on the Real Hero Drive. I downloaded it and watched it. And okay, maybe it wasn't as good as I remembered it, but I just remember at the time, you know, the feeling involved, I thought, was, you know, sometimes.
And I'm still willing to bet it was a very great match for its time. It's just, compared to all the great matches from the time, it probably doesn't hold up.
Yeah, maybe, and that is possible. But I mean, you know, things are what they are. So, but I'm going to say that my top matches this year, I thought the final was great too. Bushi and Yoshinobu Kanemaru, of all people. I mean, no disrespect to Bushi, of course, because, you know, I kind of, you know, fetishize him a little bit, but
a little.
Just a tad. But yeah, Kanemaru being the other party in this match, and I mean that match just went all over Korakuen, and it's including, like, a wild, you know, a wild jump from Bushi that maybe he shouldn't have done, but goddamn it, he did it in a suit. And can we talk about Bushi's all white everything for a minute? Throughout the tour.
He's definitely the best dressed of the best of Super Juniors.
Best dressed of Super Juniors. Oh, totally.
There you go, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, he was his all white everything shtick. I definitely was all into that. Which means he, of course, you know, there's part of me that it's also thinking that he blew his costume budget for, you know, the next 3 years. He had to go with one thing for the tournament. So, you know. But, no, I think I actually did like that match quite a bit. From night one, Hiromu in Dragon Lee, of course, that's, you know, I'm always going to rate that one highly, because those two just have incredible matches every time. Now,
in their sleep, practically.
Yeah, practically, but, you know, you couldn't tell that they were ever mailing it in, because I don't think they were mailing it in.
But, no.
But Hiromu, yeah. Now, of course, this is the first time Dragon Lee has beaten Hiromu in New Japan. But, of course, you know, he's beaten him plenty of other times in Mexico. I think maybe in Ring of Honor, even. I think they had a match while he was still Kami Itachi. So, yeah. Now, I will criticize this, is that the way that they, you know, New Japan does run tournaments now, and we said this about G1 too, is that they pretty much made it in such a way that the reigning champions can never win the tournament now. You know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I just don't know how much longer they should or could or should sustain, you know, the model of, okay, the tournament winner, your prize is you get a shot at a major show. I think it does take away from the prestige of the tournament itself. And G1 Climax, I think, has been affected by this too, to an extent.
You mean in terms of having the champion in it?
Yeah, in terms of having the champion in it, and then, you know, and then also just, it's not an honor in of itself anymore. It's just, okay, yeah, you win this, but then you also get this shot at...
It's basically become the New Japan equivalency to the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, yeah, or, you know, yeah, exactly.
I see that argument, especially in the glory days of the G1 in the 90s, and you know, you'd have the champion sometimes win. I know Kinsuke, I think, won it. Was it 2000? I think.
Yeah, so you mean back in the days when Kensuke was, you know, winning everything because Choshu.
It was a great time.
Yeah, if you're Kensuke, yeah, it was a great time.
It was a great time for Kensuke Sasaki.
To be Kensuke Sasaki, yeah.
It was a bad time if you were a junior heavyweight.
Yeah. Or you know, any other type of, you know, or anything, anyone that wasn't a shooter. You had to be a shooter or Kensuke Sasaki, and you... Otherwise, yeah, you were screwed.
So. Oh man, there's so much stuff we can cover on Strong Style history, and
yeah, there is. And actually, I think coming up, we're going to be delving back in, not that this next one, but not the one we're going to be recording next, which will be probably in a couple weeks, actually. But the one after that, we're definitely going to delve into that time period. I think I'll spoil this one. Episode 6 we haven't fully decided on because we're still arguing. the thing that we want to do, we're still arguing which one that actually applies to. But I think for episode 7 we're going to do the Shinya Hashimoto versus Naoya Ogawa feud in episode 7. So spoilers for a future episode. Of course, you know, it turns out that, you know, the last Strong Style history we did on the Island Death Matches, and it turns out that Steve, the one who actually suggested it, A, was joking, B, wasn't even there for the recording of this. So, yeah, so Lawrence and I braved it out to do the Island
Death
Matches.
That's a perfect example of an idea. Perfect example of an idea run amok.
Yeah, well, we did it. It's out there, and we got some high numbers on that one, too. I guess people like the cheese. I don't know. It's just I don't get it.
No, you know, personally, from podcasts that I listen to, it's fun listening to people miserable watching bad wrestling.
Yeah,
there's a certain enjoyment in there.
Yeah, I think we've had like two cases of miserable wrestling, because I think episode 2 of Strong Style History was that Tokyo Dome show that was absolutely no good, but. But it started a yearly tradition, so we had to cover it. So this is what we do for you, for cheap entertainment. So, anyway, yeah, I think, oh god, I need to come up with a third match for what was my third favorite match in Best of Super Juniors this year, because El Desperado unfortunately fizzled out. Towards the end there, even though he was, you know, definitely working this, you know, Penta El Cerro Miedo sort of thing. But, yeah, I don't know. Actually, you know what? Hiromu and Marty Scurll was pretty good, too, come to think of it.
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah, that was from one of the single-camera shows, too. But, you know, I think one of the issues we ran into because of streaming now, and now we can get, like, you know, same day, you know, matches up, is that there was so much of it that it was almost hard to keep up, and it was hard to keep up, and it was hard to you know, keep matches straight, you know.
Yeah, especially when they ran Corkin three times over the tournament.
Yeah, well, that's been kind of a discussion point for a while. Is that I think they're running Corkin way too much.
Yeah, I mean, they packed it for the first night, but I can't remember the second night offhand, but the third night, for sure, there was plenty of empty seats.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? Bushi and Taguchi was good, too, come to think of it. As was ACH and Kushida. Those were both from the Ishikawa show.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned ACH, he did pretty well for himself, I thought.
Yeah, he did. He's pretty well over, although I think he and Minoru Suzuki are going to end up either feuding or bonding. I can't decide which over their One Piece fandom. I can't decide which, but ACH, I'm kind of sad he didn't do – I mean, he did pretty well, but he didn't do as good. But
well, I mean it's his first outing.
Yeah, well, it was his first outing in New Japan, because remember, he won that Super Junior Tag Tournament with
Taiji Ishimori.
Of Noah, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't get his name out, sorry. But, yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that was basically his tryout.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because once they pulled out, they made it a point to take him with them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a freelancer anyway. I mean, ACH wasn't signed to Noah, so.
Yeah.
He's a freelancer, so. I saw somebody incorrectly list him as being part of ROH, which, yeah, about that. Considering how spectacularly he fell out with Ring of Honor.
I know.
About that. So the main thrust of this is Kushida won Best of Super Juniors and now gets a third shot at a second shot, but his third go round with Hiromu, which that'll be happening at Dominion. Last show, I mean, they had mentioned the feature matches of Dominion, but we had run out of time to talk about them. So I guess we're going to take that time now. Of course, as we record this, they have not announced the absolute full Dominion card. They haven't even updated it with Hiromu against Kushida now. So that still isn't on there. And they have not announced anything for the Road to Dominion show, which will take place on June the 9th. That's going to be live on New Japan World as well. So, of course, you know, as is typical for this show, we'll record this and then they'll announce it the next day. So, just to say, we warned you, this happens to this show all the goddamn time. So,
like I said on Twitter, it just shows that they're watching. They're paying attention.
Yeah, Gato's listening to us. Oh, that Wessel motherfucker. He recorded. Okay, we can release the show now. Okay, great. Thanks, dude.
How can we mess with them?
Thanks, Gato. Appreciate
actually,
it.
Mess with this podcast.
Yeah, I hear we mess with this podcast that, you know, we probably don't, we can't understand anything that they say, but, or most things that they say. Of course, I don't understand half of what we say either, which is why we say we try to make sense of New Japan Pro Wrestling. But really, we're trying to make sense of ourselves.
Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
So, back to Dominion. Dominion 611 in Osaka Joe Hall, which ironically takes place on June the 11th at Osaka Joe Hall. Amazing how they managed to align the date and location with the name of the show. It's amazing. It's like they knew. But there, as we just mentioned, there is also a Road to Road to Dominion show at Corican Hall on June the 9th that we do not have a card for yet. So let's just go through the feature matches that have been announced so far for Dominion. Michael Elgin, friend of the show, comes back to New Japan to take on Cody Rhodes. Because I guess Cody Rhodes got tired of, you know, beating on, you know, David Finlay and other young lions, or who's the first? Oh, right, Juice Robinson. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Juice has elevated his game since then, so I don't want to hear anything bad about Juice Robinson ever again. But so anyway, yeah, Michael Elgin and Cody Rhodes make their return at Dominion. Any thoughts there?
I mean, you know, with Cody, it's always kind of a coin flip as to whether he's going to gel, you know, but Elgin, I think Elgin's going to get, let me word this correctly, because I don't want to infer that Cody's not a good worker, but I think they're going to gel together.
Well, I think they're actually going to be doing this match in an upcoming Glory Pro show, too.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, which I wasn't at the last one, which was about a week and a half back. I wasn't at the last. I couldn't make that one because it was on a Friday, and I'm probably not going to make any other ones until the October one when Penta comes back. But I think this one's at the July 9th show, which I will not be at. This will be at the July 9th show for Glory Pro. So I think that's I think that's their debut in Belleville, Illinois. So, get your tickets now. Go at Glory Pro 2017 and check that out. It's a really, really good promotion if you're into indie wrestling. And if you're not into indie wrestling, then why are you listening to this show? Because
what's wrong with you?
Because we talk about indie wrestling quite a bit on this, actually. So, anyway, because a lot of indie workers tend to work New Japan, it seems, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, two more sets of indie workers are in the next match. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship, in which Roppongi Vice defend against the Young Bucks. It's the eternal struggle here.
Yeah, between Roppongi Vice and Forever Hooligans, I feel like I've been watching this match for literally 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the eternal cycle, especially since we already had this match once at Wrestle Kingdom. We started the year with this match.
It's going to be a good match. I mean, like I said, similar to Dragon Lee and Kushida, I think these two teams could have a good match in their sleep.
You mean Dragon Lee and Hiromu, you mean?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, so... I sincerely hope that Roppongi Vice retain, but we'll see. I mean, we will see. I mean, especially since Roppongi Vice are also challenging the Gorillas of Destiny at Wrestle Circus on June the 24th. So I mean, who knows? I mean, this is another one of those things where the Indies and New Japan just keep clashing with each other. But speaking of Girls of Destiny, they will be challenging War Machine for their IWGP Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. War Machine is way over. I love how over War Machine have gotten.
They're like literally the closest thing to a modern day Road Warriors.
They really are.
And they can do topes over the ropes.
That too. And while still doing Doomsday Devices too at that. Although they don't do a Doomsday device. They do it's sort of a Doomsday device, but not really.
So what's your general opinion on God nowadays?
On
Gorillas of Destiny.
The Gorillas of Destiny. let's clarify.
Talking about taking this in a weird direction.
We are not going to be. We are not going to be discussing theology on this show. For a hot minute there, I thought that the Gorillas were actually looking pretty good, and then Tangaloa had his one and only singles match in New Japan. And in the New Japan Cup, and I was completely off the train from that point. I'm like, they got to get rid of him, and they could set Tonga free and to do singles because he's actually a decent He's actually a decent, if maybe slightly underrated worker.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, your thoughts kind of echo mine to a T. I like them together as a team. I feel like they've kind of turned the corner. In terms of I'm actually looking forward to this match. Like, watching the preliminary skirmishes, over the Best of Super Juniors, I was really into them. They seem to work really well. So, as far as this match, I'm really looking forward to it. I really don't have hope for Roa. But, anything's possible. Maybe he'll turn it around sometime.
We had all talked about this, like, hey, wow, Gorillas of Destiny actually turning the corner here. I mean, this is like 6 months ago, and then that whole train of thought just got completely derailed by Loa being the biggest geek in a New Japan ring in quite some time. In that match against Yuji Nagata.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, and at that point, I was completely off that bandwagon. So... the next feature match is a lumberjack death match, is what it's being advertised as.
Yes.
For the Never Openweight Championship between Minoru Suzuki and Hirooki Goto. These are words I never thought it would come out of my mouth, but here we are. It's 2017. Here we are.
Not just a lumberjack match, a lumberjack death match.
Yes, that's how it was advertised.
No, that's one thing I love about Japan, because any sort of gimmick is just, it's a death match.
Right.
Like, I remember when they had a steel cage match with Tanahashi and Kazunari Murakami. It's a steel cage death match, which I guess with Murakami that makes sense, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's Murakami, let's face it. He was threatening to shoot on anybody at any time. He could have shot on Inoki at any time.
Oh, he's back, too.
Who? Murakami?
Murakami, yeah.
Oh, God.
Hey, he showed up in New.
Oh,
AEW.
Next exciting... God. I hate, you know, fuck Kazunari Murakami. That's all I'm going to say.
How dare you? Anyway, I'm looking forward to this match. I know I'm repeating myself, but...
Yeah, this match is just going to be weird. It's just going to be wacky.
Well, it's just an open excuse for interference, so...
Well, yeah, I mean, let's face it. I mean it's going to be a clusterfuck. I mean, I think we all know that.
You know, well, I mean, maybe... Maybe it's because I'm fresh from watching Minoru Suzuki wrestle Sanshiro Takagi in the Tokyo Dome, but you know,
I still need to see that. My God,
oh, it's so good. But
oh my God,
I enjoy watching Suzuki in these chaotic elements, so I think it's going to be a very exciting match. I mean, may not be very technical, but
was there a bit in that match in that Suzuki against Sanshiro Takagi where? He came up upon a beer vendor and didn't have any money on him to buy beer. Oh my God.
Yeah, one of the female wrestlers was trying to sell beer to nobody in the crowd. Like, she's just beer to nobody in the audience. Yeah, Suzuki basically didn't have his wallet. He had it in his trunk.
That might have actually been a funny bit if he actually did pull his wallet out of his trunk. Oh, here.
No, but the best, my favorite moment of all the whole thing was just in the first few minutes where Suzuki, they're coming out, and I know we're horribly derailing the podcast, but this is worth it. They're coming out doing their entrances on the baseball field, and it's like they're both Takagi and Suzuki are both playing to a crowd that's not there. Like Takagi's doing. You know, it's hey, hey, hey with the music, right. And nobody's there. And Suzuki's doing his clapping, and nobody's there. And right when it hits Kaze Ninare, he boots an invisible young lion. It's just the greatest thing.
Anyway. My God. I think I may finally be dropping for DDT Universe after this, finally.
The first 30 minutes of it is actually free on YouTube on their channel, so you can actually watch a lot of it there.
Oh,
but yeah, it's,
I think I know what I'm doing after I get off of this.
Definitely. For $9 or $8 it is to drop, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, it might be. Yeah. So who retains here? Actually, I don't think we've said anywhere who retains and who doesn't.
Oh, we've been kind of off and on.
Yeah. Does Goto win? Does Suzuki doesn't need the never belt? Come on, man.
It's always hard for me to bet on Goto, but you're absolutely right. He doesn't need it. To be honest, the lumberjack element kind of lends to giving Suzuki an out to lose.
Yeah. Pretty
so
much.
Yeah, I could see Goto winning.
Yeah. You know, this hasn't been officially listed yet, but we all know it's happening. The IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship between Hiromu Takahashi and the Best of Super Juniors 24 winner, Kushida. I don't know if it's as sure of a thing of Kushida winning this now because of the fact that he has that ROH belt right now. And I don't think Best in the World happens before Dominion. I'm pretty sure it doesn't.
No, I don't think it does either. It does certainly kind of throw a wrench in things, because to me, Kushida has to win.
I don't know.
I mean, once you lose in 2 minutes, it's kind of hard to rebuild yourself again.
Yeah, but I mean, so he went through this, but does that mean that Hiromu's gonna finally lay down for him? I think they would do well to keep the belt on Hiromu to, you know, keep that storyline going.
Yeah, but, you know, Gato does kind of like to switch things up every now and then, especially in a feud, an ongoing feud, and they'll put the title on one guy and then have the other guy chase for a little bit. Like, I mean, that's Okada Tanahashi in a nutshell.
Well, yeah, true. And then, you know, they'll, you know, sometimes throw another wrench in there, too. By the way, Best in the World is on June the 23rd. So, Dominion definitely happens first. So, I don't see the sense in putting the ROH belt on Kushida anyway, because it's like the thing with Ishii last year where, okay, when's he going to defend it? he's not working ROH TV. When does he... You know?
Yeah, it's kind of the point of the TV championship, isn't it?
Yeah, it's to defend once a week on TV. I mean, I thought so.
That's what Tully Blanchard taught me.
I could be wrong. But, I mean, yeah, TV title. Yeah, I mean, TV titles are supposed to be I mean, do we even need a TV title at this point? I mean, it seems kind of... I mean, it does seem really throwbackish at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I've honestly been, it's kind of derailing, going off point again, but I wasn't waiting for more companies to use, like, internet titles or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the only idea either way. They're just gimmicks, but...
Right.
You know, it's kind of taking a modern approach.
Yeah, let's not go through the whole, the title is just a prop thing again. Let's not go through that again. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't know. I think I'm going to pick Hiromu to retain, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Kushida just makes the most logical sense, so it's hard for me to go against that. But now that you mentioned the TV title, it throws a wrench in my logic.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, that damn TV title ruining shit again. God damn it. All right. The semi-main is Tetsuya Naito defending the now completely destroyed IWGP Intercontinental Championship. What's left of it against Hiroshi, against the hopefully will be showing up Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Naito's probably going to be carrying it in a paper bag at this point.
maybe one of those Tower Records bags, because hey, newsflash, they still have Tower Records in Japan apparently. Who knew? But. Yeah, I don't know. I think at this point, maybe now this is the point where they get the belt off of Naito, because, you know, to groom him for his G1 win.
I mean, I think Tanahashi's winning, because I just don't see. I mean, I don't know where you go with Naito at this point.
Well, one of two things: either A, he win. Okay, one of two things is going to happen: either A, he's going to win G1 this year, or B, he's going to get the title before Wrestle Kingdom. Because if he doesn't win G1, Okada will.
Well, if he wins G1, he's not going to have that hard a time breaking the flag, because Tanahashi already did it. So that's one thing to look forward to. Him trying to throw the G1 trophy in the air. That'll be fun.
Oh, wow. Oh, jeez.
He'll get like 2 feet off the ground.
Oh, my goodness.
And then land on his foot.
Boonk. Might land on his head.
We're booking the G1 right now.
Jeez. They're probably going to announce the G1 lineup. They're going to announce the G1 lineups at Dominion, because that's what they've done the last few years, so... So we're gonna get that, but yeah, I mean, one of two things will happen post this match is that either Naito's either gonna win G1 like he should have last year, quite frankly, or Okada's gonna win G1 because of what happens in the next match, and then Naito will beat will win the title before Wrestle Kingdom, because, you know, this has been the long term booking with, you know, Naito going after Okada, you know, in the media, and, you know, randomly spitting on him at, you know, during matches, even though they're not involved with each other right now. So, you know, that's just been long-term booking. So, yeah, either way, I think Tanahashi wins this. So, in his triumphant return from injury.
Maybe Naito can win the United States title.
Oh, God. No.
That lovely looking thing.
Yeah, I don't mind it so much, but, you know, it just seems like, wasn't this what the Intercontinental title was supposed to be to begin with?
Well, it's basically a one-to-one copy of when they did their last American show with, Jersey All-Pro Wrestling.
Yeah,
when they
yeah.
First... So, kind of feel like they're doing the same thing, but man, the belt looks like it's designed upside down. That's the only thing I don't like about it.
You might be right, actually.
It's like, I don't know, but other than that, it's fine. It's a belt.
Yeah. The main event at Dominion, of course, is Kazuchika Okada against Kenny Omega for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. This will be about the one-year anniversary of Okada getting the belt back. So he has held it for about a year.
Yeah.
At this point. And this title reign hasn't been bad at all. I mean, really. Yeah, I just
no, you know, absolutely not.
You know, and with you know the 40-minute marathons he's been running too. On this,
I mean, it's been said in terms of this year, Okada's probably has had the best year out of anyone in a long time. I think people have compared him to being like Ric Flair in the 80s in terms of standard match quality.
He's been going the distance on these title matches. I mean, he really has been. I can just see one of two things happening is that either way, Twitter is going to explode no matter what happens, because it's either going to be the Kenny Omega marks, you know, lauding, you know, the day that Kenny Omega created New Japan Pro Wrestling when he wins this, or they're going to go completely ape shit again and claim that Omega, you know, carried Okada to, you know, to a 6-star match and yada yada.
Well, Jeff, you know that New Japan needs an English speaking ace to expand, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
it's not like we watched New Japan for the Japanese wrestlers in the first place or anything.
Yeah, it's not like, you know. Yeah. Oh, brother. You know, I know we had Abby on the show, and I know that it looks like it's going to be heading this way. That, you know, there's a 50-50 chance that Kenny Omega will be walking into the G1 special shows as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. And there will be a title match. There allegedly will be a title match at these shows, even though they have not announced a goddamn thing for these yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, they couldn't anyways with the timing in Dominion, because they would basically be telegraphing their booking.
Yeah, well, gosh, they've never done that before.
Yeah, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, but it kind of shocks me that they haven't at least introduced the tournament participants.
Yeah, they've only announced, like, they just announced Jay Lethal and Adam Page at this point.
Well, they've announced the rosters for the show, which...
they did, but they haven't said... Yeah, they haven't said who's going to be... Yeah, we can run that... Yeah, we can run that down here in a few minutes, too.
Let me rant about no Kitamura.
Yeah, I don't think there's any Young Lions on the shows.
Oh, the show and Komatsu are going to be there, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, but they're kind of like in their they're in their traveling phase
right now. Yeah, I know. So they're not really Young Lions anymore.
Yeah, they're kind of in their traveling phase. Although that's great that we're going to see them. Mm-hmm.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. So
we are getting ahead of ourselves. Okay, so I'm starting to sound like Daffy Duck here. I really hope that Okada retains, to be quite frank.
you just want to see the rage from the internet?
Well, it's gonna happen no matter what. I mean, yeah, no matter what. But I really have cooled off on the whole Kenny Omega thing.
Yeah,
as time has gone on, and I mean, it just you know, I think it just bothers me when people think he's like the best wrestler in the world when there's at least four other people who are better workers than him in New Japan. You know,
well, I mean, I like Kenny a lot.
Yeah,
and...
I like him, but have I cooled off on him? Yeah.
And I was poking fun at the people that you know, says that there needs to be, you know, like Kenny has to win. And I don't think Kenny has to win, but I think even taking Long Beach out, you know, kind of giving
the shows are already sold out. I mean, the shows are sold out. They're already going to be on Access, you know.
Yeah. But taking all that out of the equation, I think long-term booking-wise, Kenny still has to win. He's kind of been, especially when he won G1 last year, he got elevated to a tier that no other Gaijin's, ever been at. So I think at this point, there's really no harm in going with Kenny. And he does have a huge fan base in Japan, and even the stuff of like, I mean, I know Kenny isn't solely responsible for it, but the Tekken 7 cross branding with him and the Bullet Club, it just makes him come off like a bigger star. I mean, I don't care about Tekken, but my God, I want to play Tekken 7 so bad just so I could put Bullet Club shirts on people.
And the Okada King outfit too. Don't forget about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
But I mean they've really telegraphed this, but at the same time, I mean, let's face it, Okada is over as hell in America too.
It's not going to make a difference either way. Like you pointed out, the shows are sold out.
Yeah.
I just look at it in terms of a long term booking. Where are we going? Because, I mean, you brought up the two scenarios: either Naito's winning G1, or they're going to go with Okada Kenny 3 at the Tokyo Dome. Which
I don't think so. I think they'll go with Okada Naito because that's what they've been book edging towards.
Oh well, you were giving two scenarios with okay.
Just to repeat myself again. Either Naito's winning G1, or before Wrestle Kingdom, he'll win the title.
Okay. I was hearing the Okada, either Okada or Naito are going to win G1. So,
Okay. So if Naito wins G1, he's going to challenge at the Tokyo Dome. He'll challenge at the Tokyo Dome. If Omega wins the title here, Okada will win G1, but then Naito will get the title before the. Because remember, what was it? It was in 2013 when Okada. No, 2014. I'm sorry. When Okada had won G1, but so going in, he assumed he was fighting AJ, but then Tanahashi beat AJ at King of Pro Wrestling that year.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be like that scenario.
I don't disagree with that as far as like that would be a great direction to go to, but at this point, I totally see them going Okada Kenny 3.
I don't know,
but we'll see.
We will indeed see.
We'll pretty much know the answer by G1.
Either way, yes, we will. Before we talk, we talk some G1 special. Did you know that there is a Lionsgate show this week?
No, I didn't actually.
There is a Lionsgate show this week, and we like us some Lionsgate. So,
all right, yes, we do.
So I want to run that one down a little bit because there's something kind of huge here in this lineup that I don't think has been really talked about. As soon as I can get the damn lineup up here,
that's what I'm doing.
where is it? Oh, here we go. I have it right here. Okay, so so on the 15th, which is 4 days after Dominion, but before the next time we record, so that's why we're talking about it, Lionsgate Project 6 from Tokyo Shinjuku Face, of course, on NJPW World. By the way, I love the Lionsgate shows. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah, absolutely. They're, in terms of just a fun, concise show to watch, I mean, they're some of the best.
Yeah, they really are. Even though it's pretty obvious that none of the Young Lions are ever going to win their matches, but it's still a fun show. But so on the 16th of the 15th of June, we will have Tetsuhiro Yagi, the newest of the Young Lions, up against El Desperado. So of course there's going to be a Guitarra de en Hell in store for that one. Hiroi Kawato and Shota Umino, Little Red Shoes, against Jado and Gato. I think we know who's winning, who won't be winning those.
Mm-hmm.
Hiroshi Tenzan and Tiger Mask 4 against the returning Dinosaur Takuma,
yes.
Who is the greatest,
one
of my favorite wrestlers right now. And
this is awesome.
Takuya Nomura of Big Japan. Now, I think it's been pretty understated. This is pretty huge, actually, because it didn't look like that Big Japan in a million years, it didn't look like the Big Japan and New Japan were ever going to be working together ever again. Especially since Big Japan seems to be working with All Japan and DDT quite a lot in recent times.
The landscape's actually really interesting because Noah just announced a DDT team for their junior tournament. So,
oh, did they? Who?
Mao and somebody. I can't remember the other guy.
Oh, is it that NWA or whatever?
Yes, yeah. And I apologize to the DDT fans. I love DDT, but I don't know everyone off the top of my head.
Okay.
But Nomura being in this is pretty huge because I'm sure you're a big fan. I'm a big fan of his. Anyone that's seen him is a big fan. He's got a lot of promise.
Okay. Well, all right then. So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, Takuya Nomura, I mean, could we see, especially since a lot of people seem to think that Big Japan, the strong division right now, actually is the true successor to Strong Style at this point. I'm not about to have that argument on this show right now, but
well, no, because like to me, what Big Japan's doing is much more akin to 90s All Japan than 1970s New Japan.
Right. But I mean, the fact is that, Big Japan working with New Japan again, for the first time in like a very long time.
Yeah, it's hard to say at this point if it's just them dabbling, you know, testing the waters, or if they're just looking for young guys, and it's not going to go any further than here.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, I mean, let's see how this goes, because we could very well see the likes of Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Okabashi, and maybe coming to his spiritual, his unspoken spiritual home, Daichi Hashimoto, I think would be... I'm actually surprised New Japan didn't go for him to begin with, honestly, but...
Well, I don't know. I think there's reasons they didn't go for him. Like, I like Daichi, so don't get me wrong, but I think if you look at his body, his, you know, kind of... He might not be at their level physically, you know? I mean, it's their loss, because obviously he's a great wrestler.
Yeah.
But I do think there's something to that, you know? I think if they wanted him, they probably would have tried to get him by now.
Yeah, well, I'm not the type of dude that says that New Japan should be signing all of the wrestlers, because no, I don't think they should be signing all of the wrestlers. I think, you know, I like that there's a diversity, like, you know, somebody like, you know, Ben Kay in Dragon Gate, that's somebody you think that, you know, given the amount of attention on bulkier guys that, you know, Nagata and Nakanishi have been going for as prospects for the dojo, you know, somebody like a Ben Kay from Dragon Gate would have been a perfect fit, you know, with Hinare and Katsuya Kitamura and the like. But at the same time, I like the fact he's in Dragon Gate too, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Daichi Hashimoto working Big Japan, I thought was great for Big Japan, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm not one of those types that think that, you know, just because New Japan is my favorite promotion that they should be signing all the talent. No, because I like, there's a diversity in the you know, pro-res ecosystem of talent, you know?
Yeah, and New Japan really hasn't done... I mean, they dabbled a little bit with Noah, but there really hasn't been a good, you know, quote-unquote promotional invasion in a long time. And I'm not even necessarily advocating that they do that.
No,
because...
yeah, let's not. I mean, that's such a, you know... Invasions to me are like on the same level as, you know, the evil ownership angles. You know, it just, come on. It was, yeah, well, it was great in the late 90s. We are in the late 2010s now. Come on, you know?
Well, I mean, you could do something on a small scale, you know, and the times that New Japan has done it on a small scale, it's worked out very well. You know, like the Noah stuff in recent years.
Yeah,
two guys flying a flag.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was good stuff, but you know, real world politics got in the way of that. So
yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, anyway, so hey, Big Japan and Big Japan offering up some talent for a Lionsgate show. Next after that, Manabu Nakanishi takes on his prospect Katsuya Kitamura.
I'm so excited for this.
Yeah, I mean, we know Kitamura won't win because it's a Young Lions show, but yeah.
Man, what's funny is if things were all fair, Kitamura would destroy Nakanishi.
Yeah, probably. And maybe that actually happens. I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe they could throw a wrench here. I doubt it, but...
Well, Kitamura's been pinned already, right? I mean, he's been pinned by... Hasn't Oka pinned him in a match?
Or submitted him? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, well, because Kitamura comes off as someone that just... You could just almost push him now. You know, I mean, he's still green around the ears, but just physically... I know I'm sounding like Vince here, but just physically, just he's got such an awesome presence.
Well, yeah. I mean, he does, but yeah, I mean, he still needs to learn, though, too. I mean, let's face it. That's why he's a Young Lion, because he needs to learn.
I'm just saying, put the belt on him now. Yeah. And don't worry about things later. Don't worry about his big head.
Yeah, of course not. Yoshihashi against Yuma Aoyagi of All Japan. Now, you know, the initial shock of All Japan guys working Lionsgate was enough. Now it's kind of like, oh, okay, well, they're here. They're sending somebody back here. So, yeah, Yuma Aoyagi from All Japan working this. So, which is still kind of strange, but, you know.
Yuma actually works a lot of dates outside of All Japan, so it's not too surprising. But he's definitely a good name. He's got a lot of talent.
Yeah. And then the main event on this Lionsgate show is Yuji Nagata and his prospect, Tomoyuki Oka, against Satoshi Kojima and his kind of unspoken prospect from another company, Ayato Yoshida of K-Dojo.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually, in terms of... continuous booking, they did a really good job.
There's some continuity going on here.
It was
Yoshida and Dinosaur Takuma against Tenkoji, mm-hmm. and then Kojima against Yoshida singles at the last Lionsgate show, and now they're teaming together.
That almost makes me think Yoshida might be being groomed for a roster spot. Who knows?
Oh, you mean, oh, yeah, well, I mean, with Taka, you know, Taka's still, you know, working in New Japan, it's not outside of the realm of possibility, so, mm-hmm. Hey, Lionsgate Project 6, that's coming up, and you should watch it, because it's fun stuff, and we like fun stuff in, New Japan, it's all good. Couple other things I want to talk about here, I just want to point out, it doesn't seem like anything's going to be happening as yet. But about a week or so back, there were some high-profile firings in CMLL. And how this could have affected things, well, the high-profile firings in CMLL were Maximo, who was, you know, CMLL's world heavyweight champion at the time, as well as La Mascara, who was the light heavyweight title champion at the time. Now, of course, titles don't really mean shit in Mexico when you get down to it.
No,
but still, they put titles on these guys, and that's what happened. And so they were caught up in an incident with one of their other relatives, who happens to be Psycho Clown of AAA, another promotion entirely, and they all attacked and destroyed the prized Mustang of Ultimo Guerrero because of some politics going on regarding the head of the wrestlers union, the leadership of the wrestlers union in CMLL, following the death of Brazo de Oro, who was the head of it for about 20 years, but all three of these wrestlers were members of the Alvarado family, as was Brazo de Oro. So they were fired. Now, why we thought this might have been a big deal is because La Mascara was part of Los Ingobernables and also, really tight with Rush. Well, Rush has two other members of two other brothers wrestling, as well as his father, Pierre Roth. But, including Dragon Lee, who was just in Best of Super Juniors. Now, I heard some stories, possibly. Now, I these are unsubstantiated, but there may have been some speculation that Dragon Lee was supposed to have won A Block of Best of Super Juniors. And I'm wondering if maybe this might have had something to do with it, because although it doesn't seem as if Rush is going to be leaving CMLL after the firing of his good buddy La Mascara. So, I don't know. This is kind of like something to put in the wait-and-see file. But it seems that it won't directly affect Los Ingobernables de Japón, because it seems CMLL owns that trademark. Not Rush and La Mascara. Because otherwise, La Sombra, when he became, you know, what's his name? Andre Cien Almas now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Andrade.
In NXT, he could have used Los Ingobernables, but, you know, he's not, obviously. So, yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. There's something. This is kind of in the wait and see file. For what could happen with, any future repercussions, but nothing's been said as yet. So, do we want to talk about what was said about Shibata and Hanma real quick?
We can. What was said?
Well, on May 16th, there was a. There was a press conference in which Takaaki Kidani talked about, you know, the U.S. expansion plans. But before that, the head trainer, medical trainer Takeshi Misawa of New Japan, gave an update on the conditions of Honma, Tomoki Honma and Katsuyori Shibata. I guess Honma had been moved from a hospital specializing in cervical vertebrae to a rehab hospital in Osaka.
Yeah, I heard he was walking now, or even running, so he's apparently doing pretty good.
So he hasn't been discharged yet, and he's doing muscle training, you know, with permission of, from the doctors. As for Shibata, he has been moved out of ICU and into the general ward. He apparently has no trouble walking and talking, but there's no way to comment on any after effects of what happened with him as yet. So, it seems like maybe a whole lot of nothing, but it's a little something, you know? So Hanma, you say that you think he's been walking and even possibly running right now?
Well, that's what I heard. And I'm certainly seeing pictures of him almost every day, just kind of walking around doing stuff and looking in good spirits.
Well, that's okay. Well, I mean, good for him. Shibata, we haven't really heard much of anything else since. But I guess they're talking like they're going to be, looking at, more of a medical committee now on this. I think maybe one of the first things they do is maybe don't use your head. a match.
Maybe let's outlaw the moves that impact direct head contact.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Let's think on that for a few minutes, because I mean
that's what frustrates me the most about New Japan has a physical style, and there's nothing you can really do about that except outlaw like ridiculously stupid things like legit headbutts,
right?
Or I mean. You know, there's even little things you could do, like the diving headbutt. There's no reason anyone should be doing the diving headbutt anymore. You know, we know the damage it causes. And it's not even that cool of looking of a move. Just do a splash.
Yeah.
So, oh, that's my rant.
Yeah. No, it's a necessary rant, I think. Yeah, I mean, headbutts anymore, I think I can never, I can simply never see a headbutt ever again and be okay.
Well, the diving headbutt has literally destroyed the career of all of my favorite wrestlers. So,
that's something to consider here for a few minutes.
Yeah.
But Kidani's also was talking about the expansion of USA. I guess he says that Long Beach Convention Center is kind of like Ota Ward as far as size.
Yeah,
so he think that maybe they can run buildings twice that size. Well, maybe let's see how these shows go first, brother. I mean, yes, they're already sold out, but, you know, there's tickets bought versus actual attendance, too, you know?
Yeah, we're not going to know until their second show, or the second go-around.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if they're even considering doing a second go-around, I mean, I don't know if I can, you know, drop everything like that, like, you know, for this particular weekend, you know. This kind of became like an event thing, you know, where people are planning, you know, vacations around it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can do something like this once a year, but from what it sounds like, they're going to be setting up pretty much a territory and running regularly there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be seeing, you know, the top New Japan stars, but I don't know. That's kind of interesting. On one hand, it sounds ridiculously ambitious to the point that I don't know how it's going to sustain itself. But, you know, if this is what they want to do and they want to kind of establish their brand in America.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. And he's also saying, and Kidani's also saying he's hoping that the Wrestle Kingdom show on January the 4th of 2020, which happens on a Saturday. He's really hoping that he has the first legit sellout of the Tokyo Dome in almost two decades, which I guess, you know, we still have some time to build to that. But, you know, I know that the attendance has been going up.
Yeah. And they don't BS their attendances anymore. So they say, but
so they say this is pro wrestling after all. So who knows?
They're not claiming 2,200 people at Corican Hall. So I have to take them at their word.
Yeah. So we were talking about earlier in the show regarding the G1 special. They did announce that there is going to be a press conference / autograph session on June the 30th at Murakai, which is a Japanese shopping outlet. This one in Gardena, which is, I looked at the map, it seems to be, you know, from my limited knowledge of the you know, greater Los Angeles metropolitan area, it seems to be right in between the city of LA proper and Long Beach. So I'm thinking, yeah, I think the crew will definitely be trying to attend this presser.
Oh, it's in Little Tokyo.
Oh, okay. Did you look it
up?
Okay,
I just looked it up right now. Just out of curiosity, because I've been to Little Tokyo.
Okay, so it's in Little Tokyo. Okay, all right. Well, that makes sense then. So
yeah, it does.
Have you ever been to Murakai?
I don't think. Actually, you know what? Maybe this isn't in Little Tokyo. They have one in Little Tokyo.
Okay.
So this one,
this
no.
Isn't...
No, it's not. It doesn't look like it is. I apologize. I don't know much about the LA area, despite living in California. I apologize.
Okay. So, anyway, so we have all the attendees for G1 special. I'm going to quickly go down the list. Hiroshi Tanahashi, duh. I mean, he was only on the poster and everything. I think we could also say, you know, Naito, Okada, and Omega, because they were already on the poster. Jushin Liger, Kushida, David Finlay and his leopard print will be there, as will Juice Robinson, Michael Elgin, friend of the show, Sho Tanaka and Yohei Komatsu, so that's awesome, as will another Young Lion excursionee, Jay White. So, hey, that whole graduating class is, like, together now on these shows.
Yeah, that's actually really cool.
It is, actually. Yoshitatsu and Billy Gunn.
I like one of those people.
Good for you. Will Ospreay, Tomohiro Ishii, and Roppongi Vice will be there, as will the rest of Los Ingobernables, Hiromu, Evil, Sonata, and Bushi. That's the whole crew there, so that's kind of cool, actually. Zack Sabre Jr., will be on these shows, as will War Machine.
The sole representative of Suzuki Gun.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of disappointing.
He better come out. He better come out to Kaze Ni Nare.
He won't. He won't. He won't.
I know, you know, it's kind of foolish to expect them to bring everyone or certain people, but I was wanting to see Suzuki so bad.
Yeah, I think that would have been cool too. But War Machine, that's cool. They'll be there, as well the Briscoe brothers, which fuck them. I can't stand them. Jay Lethal will running out the ROH contingent. Titan, Volador, and Dragon Lee from CMLL will be there.
That's cool.
No real surprises there. As well as, the rest of Bullet Club. We already know about Adam Page being there because we talked about that U.S. Championship tournament. And Kenny Omega's on the poster. The Grills of Destiny, The Young Bucks, Marty Scurll, Yujiro Takahashi, and Bad Luck Fale also on these shows. So, yeah, this does sound like a pretty well like an actual New Japan card.
It's as close lineup. As close to one as we're gonna get right now.
Yeah, pretty much. I am a little disappointed we're not getting some of the active Young Lions right now, though, because I've actually really been enjoying their matches of late.
Yeah, no, I wanted to get Kitamura's autograph so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of strange that they're not gonna have Young Lions there though. Even to work to work ringside.
Well, someone has to keep up the dojo while they're gone.
I guess. And actually, there's a more practical reason for this too, by the way, because on July the 4th, those Young Lionsgate Project 7 will run. There's been no card announced for that, but yeah, Lionsgate Project 7 is on July the 4th.
Well, that kind of explains why the third generation's not there then.
Yeah, which also means that after getting back on Monday the 3rd and being dead to the world, I'm gonna have to get up and watch more New Japan.
I know there's never enough time to watch all the wrestling.
I know. Speaking of which, so we've also determined that Pro Wrestling Guerrilla will not be running that weekend, which blows my mind that they have a captive audience there, and they're not gonna try to make some scratch from that. They schedule it for the next week, so it's like what I think it's on the 8th or 9th.
Well, they're gonna have a sold out house either way. So
yeah, I mean, yeah,
I don't think they care.
Yeah, well, that's fine, whatever. I mean, yeah, I'll only
just like they don't care about getting streaming going. It's just they're just happy with what their operation is.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, if it works for them, great. I think they're leaving a bunch of money on the table, but you know. Mm-hmm. But we also determined that the Crash, the Lucha promotion from Tijuana that Conan is booking now. That's where La Rebellion, like Penta and Phoenix, have all been operating out of there recently. We determined they don't want to make any money that weekend because they're refusing to run, to come up from Tijuana to run L.A. that weekend. So is there going to be – is anybody going to try to capitalize on this?
I would have to think someone in the area is running a show, but I haven't heard anybody.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't heard anything about that. So, I mean, it's just amazing that, here's two promotions that, could raise their profile. Especially PWG, they have a pretty raised profile as it is. But, I mean, this is like PWG with New Japan guys on it, possibly. Because a bunch of these folk on the G1 shows have worked PWG, including the reigning IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion. Mm-hmm. He was in Bola last year, so Chris has a photo of him and Jushin Liger from those shows, But I guess the Crash refusing to run kind of surprises me. You think Conan would be all about trying to make that money?
You think.
But here we are, and so I guess so far nobody has jumped up to say that they want to make money on Friday, June the 30th, running a wrestling show with a pretty well captive audience.
Hey, that's fine. It's more money for stupid T-shirts.
I guess, but
and pointless wrestler keychains. Because New Japan loves those gimmicks.
Yeah, well, somebody has to, right? Somebody's got to keep the keychain folk in business, I guess. So, I don't have anything else. Do you, Steve?
I'm just very excited to see Billy Gunn.
Lord. You know what? I saw Billy Gunn like a week and a half ago, okay?
Yes, you did, and you sent me a picture, and
I
was so happy.
I sent Lawrence the same picture, too. I was pretty well that right. close to him, so. And you know what I did during his match?
What did you do?
I got up. It was the main event of this whole show, and even though I liked two of the workers in that match, he was headlining with Kevin Thorne, aka Mordecai from the WWE.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, well, yeah, he's local, so there's like a charity show at Pendleton High School, and these two were teaming against Jake Something, who works Glory Pro, and Donovan Dijak. So I like those
two. Is Jake Something his name, or are you just forgetting his last name?
No, that's what he goes by, Jake Something. He's
that's awesome.
He's at Jake Wayne Holmes on Twitter, but that's his gimmick. So you know what I did? Ended up doing during that match? Going to the merch table to talk to. I got up and went to the merch table to talk to Hiroki Murase from Wrestle One because he was at that show too. He's on excursion here.
Well. I don't blame you for that.
Yeah, so... and little did I know that Jake Oman, who also worked Wrestle One, is actually from Fishers, Indiana. So I ended up talking with him, too. So.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, so I had some Wrestle One, more sleazy Japanese indies to discuss.
Did you ask him what Muto smelled like?
No, I did not, but I showed him my phone lock screen because it has... My phone's lock screen is that magazine photo of a cover of Keiji Muto.
Glorious.
Yes, of course it is. It's totally glorious. So, anyway, yeah, shout out to Hiroki Murase, otherwise known as Utamaro now. That's what he's going by here. So anyway, cool stuff. So, yeah, I don't have anything else. We're going to give... our producer, Chris Damasceno, some space here because he wanted to talk. So we're going to do our normal plugs at the end here. Steve?
Just follow me at Steve Cash. I tweet about wrestling, and that's about it.
Once again, you can follow me at Strong Style Story on Twitter. That's, without the E in style. The regular blog is at Strong Style Story. .tumblr.com, and thank you for joining us here at Place to Be Nation, the pro wrestling only podcast feed. We're going to be next recording on June the 18th because it'll be after Dominion, but before the G1 special shows. And then coming soon, we're going to be flooding your feed with podcasts. Not as close to live as we can from LA during these shows. So that's coming soon to a podcast feed near you. So once again, thanks everybody for joining us, and thanks to all the listeners who have been listening to us since the beginning, or as close to the beginning as possible, from the Podomatic and iTunes feeds. Please come over. Join us at Place to Be Nation. There's so much great wrestling and podcast content for you to listen to. Shout out to Lawrence O'Brien. Shout out to JB Rowe. I'm actually wearing his Shibata shirt right now. I wore his Akira Hokuto shirt yesterday. So JB Rowe is an artist who makes wrestling T-shirts, and he's a good friend of the show. Comes on the show sometimes, so we hope we get him back on soon. So anyway, at this time we're gonna turn it over to our usual co-host and the producer of this show as well as Strong Style History. Until then, we'll be back the week of June the 18th. Chris, thanks a lot, and the floor is yours, brother. Goodbye.